Who does the widow in the parable in today's gospel represent? So on the first reading, it seems pretty clear that she represents us, that we knock, we persevere in prayer, we wait, and eventually the door is open. That as we persevere, eventually the Father hears and answers. And that's true. That's certainly true. That's orthodox. Lots of saints have preached about that in the past. So I don't want to discount that at all. It's certainly true, but I think there's also more that's true. There's another interpretation that also works. And especially when we remember that we have to keep the priority of God's action in mind. That God is the one that always makes the first move. Because if we don't keep that in mind, if we don't keep in mind the fact that God is the one that always moves first, we run the risk of ending up like the prophets of Baal in the Old Testament, where we're desperately trying to get the attention of a God who's not listening to us, which is not the case. On the contrary, St. Paul says to the Philippians that it's God that inspires every good desire and good work in us. So the very fact that we're coming to the Lord in prayer is a sign that he's already working within us. And so in that sense, the persistent widow who comes back over and over and over again could also be God. That he is constantly appealing, offering, knocking, asking, waiting for us to answer him. And then if God is the widow, then we are the judge. We are the one that has to choose eventually to answer. And I don't know about you, but for me, sometimes that takes quite a while. But the good news is that the widow is persistent. That God does not rest until we answer. That he never stops asking for our response. He never grows tired of waiting. In every virtuous action, every action where we choose to do the right thing, the thing that makes us more like God who made us, God gives us two graces, one right after the other. And the first is what theologians call operative grace, because it's always operating. And that's the grace to be able to respond. It's like God opening the door, giving us the freedom to actually choose the good thing. Because without that grace, we would be incapable of choosing anything good. And God is constantly offering, never withholding that grace. There's never a moment that any human being is denied that grace to choose the right thing. And then the second grace is called cooperative grace because it requires our cooperation. So the first one, God's going to open the door no matter what I do. But for the second grace, I have to give my yes. So God opens the door. He gives me the ability to choose what's right. And then the second that I use my will, that I decide to do what's right, which God can't decide for me, but the second that I make that choice, he comes rushing back in with all of the graces I need to follow through on what I just decided to do. So it's like God comes and he opens the door, and the second that I choose to walk through it, he actually comes and carries me through. So for example, gossip. Let's say that I know a really great story about Father John because I live with him. And so I know all sorts of things that you might also want to hear. And so after Mass, I see you and I think, oh, they're going to love this story. And then I realize in that moment, oh, wait, that won't make me like God. That's gossip. Okay, in that moment, God is giving me the grace to choose what's right. And so the second that I resolve that as hard as it is, I'm not going to tell you this great story about Father John, God comes in and he gives me all of the grace to follow through on that resolution. So when we act righteously, all of the credit goes to God because he's the one that enables us to choose. And then we choose, and then he comes and sees it through to fruition. But when we sin, none of the blame goes to God, because he gave us the ability to choose the right thing. And that choice is the only responsibility we have, and so that is on us. But that in both scenarios, God is coming at the beginning. He's knocking on the heart. He's saying, here's the chance. Here's your opportunity. Render for me a just decision, just like the widow in the gospel. And so we can see all of that, all of the priority of God's action, the fact that God always acts first, in the definition that the church gives us of stewardship. Because the church says that stewardship is the grateful response of a Christian disciple. Not the grateful initiation, not the grateful beginning, but the grateful response, which implies that God has already done something. He's already come and started the process. Because God always acts first. He's given life, talents, gifts, money, resources. He's given my personality, my loves, my passion. He's given us our time, our energy. And so the challenge for us is to see that he gives every single one of those things as an invitation. As an invitation to share whatever it is, to give it back in gratitude. That's our response. That nothing, none of those good things are given for their own sake. That God does not give me time, money, he doesn't even give me my life just so that I can make myself comfortable and hold those things for myself. But he gives me those things so that I can choose to trust him by giving them back. By saying, I'm not going to cling to this to take care of myself, but I'm going to let it go in a moment of trust. Pope St. John Paul II loved to repeat this line from the Vatican Council that man cannot fully find himself except through a sincere gift of himself. He called it the law of the gift. It's like spiritual physics, spiritual metaphysics. That's just how we're built. That I only come alive by giving myself away. And that the inverse is also true, that by refusing to give myself away, I prevent myself from becoming fully alive. And it turns out that John Paul II and the fathers of the Vatican Council weren't coming up with this out of thin air, but they were actually getting it from someone very famous named Jesus Christ, who said that he who loves his life loses it. And he who gives up his life in this world will keep it for eternal life. So there's an important point in the midst of all this talk about being a gift, self-gift, giving myself away. There's an important point that part of our dignity as people, as persons, is that human beings can't be divided up into parts. That's beneath our dignity. That self-gift requires giving everything. That I can't hold something back and at the same time say that I'm giving everything, that I'm making a sincere gift of myself. And that's the principle that underlies so much of the gospel morality. That I can't say I give you everything while I'm holding back part of who I am. That sincere gift of self requires wholeness. It requires everything. But often there are parts of my heart that I would rather disown because they're painful, or they're ugly, or they're unpleasant, or they're inconvenient. And so I want to hold them away from myself. But if I'm disowning part of my own self, part of my heart, part of who I am, then I cannot give myself fully. Because instead of giving myself, I'll always be giving a character or an image or a presentation, but not myself as I really am. And so there's a caution in the midst of all of this talk about generosity and sacrificial giving. There's a caution that it's possible to use what looks like stewardship, what looks like generosity, and to use it as a shield. To stay so busy and so sacrificial, always giving things outwardly, that I don't actually have to go inward and look at what needs healed. That I can be so busy giving my time, my talent, my treasure, that I never take the time to look in and see that there's actually a lot of pain inside, and my heart's fragmented, and so I can't actually give a gift of myself because I'm split. But the good news is that Jesus Christ wants to heal our hearts. He wants to make us whole. So long as I am at war with myself, pushing some parts of myself away and holding others up into the spotlight so that everybody sees them, I'll never be able to make a gift of myself. I'll never make myself a gift. And so Jesus wants to come to heal our hearts. He wants to come and make them whole, to make us whole. And so he longs for us to come to him, for us to be the judge that finally responds to the persistent widow, to finally open up and to cast out into the deep, to look right at those things that we'd prefer to ignore or pretend aren't there, to open up to him and to open up to those who we love and who love us about the things that we'd rather keep hidden. Because it's only when we start to acknowledge and uncover those things that Jesus can come in precisely to those places and show us how deep the Father's love is for us right there. It's by sharing those disowned parts that we're made whole that Jesus comes and shows us how the Father loves us as we really are, and not only as we think we ought to be.